Thank you. Thank you for that introduction, and thank you, Sonia, for organizing this panel. I'm thrilled to be here this morning and to see a full audience here, some of the familiar faces here in the room, too. I'm going to be talking about a course I teach at the Harvard School of Public Health, Sexuality and Public Health, and then more broadly about teaching affirmative models and affirmative perspectives on sexual health in a public health school setting. I have no disclosures. I'd like to thank the many people who have contributed intellectually and creatively to this course. Medina Agenor in the back of the room, who has been a fabulous teaching assistant and now a graduate from the Harvard School of Public Health. Allegra Gordon and Heather McCauley I saw, and others who have been involved in the course. I'm supported by the Maternal and Child Health Bureau. I want to thank their support. The learning objectives for my presentation this morning for the next 15 minutes are, one, to differentiate affirmative from protectionist approaches to sexual health promotion. This should be a familiar concept to many of you. To describe the rationale and approach of scientific teaching and active learning, and to identify ways to integrate affirmative sexuality perspectives into curricula at public health schools. So many of you may be familiar with the book Pleasure and Danger, edited by Carol Vance, almost 30 years ago, in 1984, where she cogently argued that feminist critiques of sexual violence are crucial. But a unitary focus on harms reinforces a simplistic and fractured sense of female sexuality. The woman as victim focus overwhelms other facets of women's sexual lives, leaving no room for female pleasure, agency, or desire. Now, flash forward the decades from this, from the time that this groundbreaking book was published, volumes have been written expanding on these ideas, especially by feminist writers, LGBT writers, and from the humanities disciplines in the academy. So what about public health? In 2006, an informal survey of U.S. public health school curricula asked the question, what are public health schools teaching on this topic? And this informal survey was led by several students from the Harvard School of Public Health, including Anne Montgomery, Ida Hatoum, and other classmates who probably are all professors somewhere by now. And what were their findings? That public health schools in general were behind the times, not keeping up with the humanities, not keeping up with the writing that was happening out in the field. There was nearly a sole focus on the problems of disease, of violence, of other harms, and rarely was there a focus on the physical and socio-emotional pleasures or satisfaction as and their role in health promotion, in sexual health promotion. So what was missing from the public health curricula on average was a distinction between protectionist versus affirmative perspectives on sexual health. So but sexual health and rights scholars distinguish protectionist, it could be described as the right to be free of sexuality-based interferences such as STIs, sexual violence, criminalization of consenting partners, etc. That is what might be described as a protectionist perspective. An affirmative perspective might be described as asserting the right to sexual diversity, to pleasure, to self-expression. Leonore Tiefer, who many of you might have read her work, Alice Miller, and many others have written very eloquently on these ideas and their role in public health. And this shift, again, has emerged primarily driven by feminist writers and LGBT writers, and then others working in general in human rights and health rights fields. So the informal survey I mentioned and all of this writing and these other literatures catalyzed a new course at the Harvard School of Public Health, which was launched in 2008, Sexuality and Public Health. And the vision was to create a course that was affirming, expansionist, and exploratory. So quite different from what a protectionist perspective might bring to a course. And also a course that does not assume that public health must cede the realm of pleasure until after all dangers have been eliminated. So the course is motivated on three fairly simple lines of inquiry, or that can be stated simply. Why do people have sex? How do people have sex? And with whom, where, when, what do they do? And how can we as public health researchers and practitioners promote sexual health? The course is also based very much in a pedagogical approach and methodology of scientific teaching. This is a fabulous book on scientific teaching put out by Handelsman Miller and Fund in 2006. And you may also be familiar with a more popular term, flip classroom. It's gotten a lot of attention on TED Talks and in the mainstream media. What they share in common is the idea of levels of cognitive work of the learner. So Bloom's taxonomy coming out of the education and psychology literature has been modified by Anderson and Krathwohl. The basic idea is that higher order types of cognitive work include creating, evaluating, analyzing, applying, and the lowest order cognitive work at the bottom of this pyramid is remembering factual information. If you think about the standard lecture course, it's all about remembering the bottom rung on this, or bottom level on this pyramid, and it is not working toward the highest order cognitive work. With the flipped classroom or with active learning and scientific teaching, the focus is on the top of the pyramid. So with the principles of scientific teaching and active learning, the main goal is to work at the higher order cognitive level. The classroom is used for critical thinking, for rigor, creativity, and experimentation, which defines research. Scientific research. Classroom activities involve problem solving, inquiry-based learning, students constructing new knowledge. And the evidence is very much in support of this approach to teaching. It's been shown in multiple studies to improve learning and also improve students' abilities to apply new skills and concepts in the field later on after they're done with school. So another aspect of scientific teaching and active learning is that much of the learning happens outside of the classroom, particularly that bottom level of the pyramid, that is learning factual information. So that happens outside of the classroom. And then we can use class time, it frees up class time, to motivate students, to frame concepts and theoretical models, to identify challenges, organize and synthesize factual information. So not presenting factual information, but helping people organize and synthesize it. And then engage students in problem solving to apply and generate new knowledge. Some examples of the kind of activities that can be done during class time are free writes on assigned questions, and I'll give more detailed examples in a moment, quiz and compare to help to reveal implicit assumptions, analogy generation to spark frame shifts and deeper learning, group problem-solving activities on current dilemmas in the field, in our case, the field of sexual health, role plays, debates, and case method teaching. The broad topics that we cover in this course include an introduction to historical and political context of sexual health and sexual health promotion, theoretical frameworks, for instance, scripting theory, sexual orientation, gender identity in terms of development, definitions, dimensions, differing expressions. Research concepts is another topic area for the course, research concepts and skills, conceptual and methodological challenges in the field, what counts as sex, and how can sex be counted, are questions we ask in the class, sexual repertoires, ethical concerns in research. Other topics include sexual quality of life across the life course, in terms of relationships, communication, masturbation, orgasm, satisfaction, well-being, and more. Sexual education for youth, science in political, economic, and religious context around sex ed, particularly in the United States. Negotiation skills for working with school and community stakeholders and gatekeepers around sexual health promotion for youth. And then another topic includes the so-called female condom and how that might be promoted, applying health communications, social marketing skills. So here are a few examples of free writes that we use in the class. A free write is a five-minute period in the class where I ask the students to all get out a piece of paper, write their name on the top, and they have 5 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, to answer a question, not speaking to their neighbor, just writing anything that comes to mind. So in class one, the introductory class, a question that we begin with is the question, what is sex? We get all kinds of answers to that. Later, after we've had several classes, it's in class four where we're focusing on conceptual challenges in research. And a question that I ask them to answer is, should the definition of sex, as in sexual behavior, be person and context specific. Why or why not? And this is in a class where we're talking about research methods, and we talk about the pros and cons of being very relative or relativist about what sex means, or being very standardized, which is the tendency of research. Then I have the students pass it in, so I can see an example. I can see information from all the students on what their thinking is like before we get together for class discussions on these ideas, and I can give them more feedback. Another example of what we do in class, a three-minute free list analogy on an assigned question. So in this case, again, they get out a piece of paper without talking to their neighbors, fill in as many completions to this analogy as they can. And this is in a class on promoting sexual well-being. Masturbation is to sexual health as blank as to blank. And it's wide open. They can include anything they want in here, anything that comes to mind in 3 minutes. And then we have a discussion about how the analogies work, what it made them think of in terms of reframing sexual health. And something that's long been shown is that analogy is a very powerful teaching tool and communications tool for sparking frameships or deeper understanding of concepts by making comparison with something that's seemingly dissimilar. And I find that there's several points in the class where using analogy or these kinds of comparisons actually helps people think very differently about sexual health. Something else we do in the first class is a quiz. Is it sex quiz? This is anonymous. I give them 6 very brief scenarios of fictional characters in a sexual encounter that has some ambiguity. And they're given multiple choice response options. How would you describe this encounter? Not sex, almost but not quite sex, just barely sex, or sex. And this is taken from a really brilliant study by Peterson and Mullenhard, who used this in their research. Then, it's several classes later when we're talking about research concepts and challenges that come up in research that present the results and we interpret them together. Unbeknownst to the students, the quizzes actually have characters vary in the apparent sex and gender of who's involved in the encounter, which adds another level of ambiguity and diversity in the responses we get from the students. When I present the results, there's actually a great deal of heterogeneity in how the students, just in a class of 20, how they interpret whether a situation is sex or not, or almost. And it opens up a lot of discussion around implicit assumptions that the students have and that any people might have when responding to surveys. And then one last example, in class 6, we cover sex ed and negotiation skills. This one we've written an original teaching case. It's a fictional story, sex ed at the crossroads in East Point, which is a fictional town. The in-class activity is to role play in characters from the story and negotiation on the school's sex ed dilemma, what to offer, where to get the money, how much money to spend, where they're role playing as a DPH staffer, a teacher, a parent, and then 2 community advocates, one from a Catholic youth organization in East Point and another from Planned Parenthood. So in summary, overall, the course, Sexuality and Public Health at the Harvard School of Public Health, has been well received by the students. It's gotten 2 awards for the course. It's based in scientific teaching, the active classroom, or what people call the flipped classroom, evidence-based to improve learning, so you can have faith in this type of approach to teaching. And it makes teaching more enjoyable, actually, from my perspective, too, much more enjoyable and rewarding than straight-up lectures for a semester. Most importantly, students garner the skills they need to apply affirmative sexuality perspectives in their own work in the field. Now, what I'd like to open up to you all is to ask the question, what can you do, what may you already be doing, and what more could you do at your school to get affirmative sexuality perspectives into public health curricula? Can it fit within existing courses or seminars? Are there allies or aligned interest groups or other programs of faculty or students on campus who you might be able to work with? What kind of barriers do you see to integrating these perspectives into a campus? And what strategies maybe you are using or have seen already for successfully getting affirmative perspectives into the curriculum? So I'm happy to answer questions now. I would also be very interested to hear your thoughts on how you think this can work on your campus or how it might already be working on your campus. Thank you.
In between presenters for questions, and then hopefully we'll have some extra time at the end as well. So, open it up.
I just wanted to ask, do you mean how we teach this in a
Oh, I guess for the teachers in the room, you probably want to know how to get pleasure into the curriculum for sure. But what I meant was, if you've found approaches that have worked to be able to bring this into the curriculum, are you seeing it at schools or institutions that you work at?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yes, I see your point. You certainly could answer from that perspective too. I would say I haven't seen a whole lot of that in the curriculum at the school. I don't know if I can call on people from the audience, Medina or Allegra. How much more of affirmative sexuality have you seen in the curriculum at the Harvard School of Public Health? Okay, I think maybe we have our answer. Thank you, Medina.
Yeah, I mean, it's very important for HIV programs or reproductive health programs to understand from a certain point of view. And we have to deal with things like
other schools, if you've seen courses like this or at a part of a course, maybe bringing in these perspectives. I know the group at APHA is putting on a panel like this every year in hopes that it will infiltrate further. Have other people seen courses? Yeah, you have your hand up there in the middle?
Sorry, I'm not answering your question.
Okay. Is that a no? You haven't seen it then?
But I was just wondering okay. if you all interact at all with the other humanities departments, for example, that are doing gender-based or sexuality-based courses.
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, Medina, sorry to keep calling on you. You're trying to stand in the back there. Medina actually just is very involved in a cross-Harvard data collection, doing interviews with people teaching about sexuality from all the different disciplines across the entire university, and put together a voluminous report on what's being done and how they relate and how people really see their work differently if they're coming from, like you had mentioned to me, from sociology or policy or something else may see it very differently. But there is a movement. President Faust at Harvard and the Radcliffe Institute are trying to get a lot more communication across disciplines, which we're very excited about.
I'm a graduate of the Nelson School of Public Health.
Ah, that's the one standout school for sure. Yeah.
I mean, this is for me a reminder of how good we
are. Yes, absolutely.
The sexuality and health track in the department of population of Canada. And they made some changes to the curriculum to now certificate in sexuality and health. But this is essentially for our cohort. I think this is why we all like to nail it.
Absolutely. Thank you for mentioning that. And Anne Montgomery, who is one of the lead students who did that informal survey, left Harvard after she finished her master's and went to do a doctorate there, the Mailman School. That's really a standout and a model in a lot of ways. The rest of us are trying to catch up in some ways.
Yeah, I think we have time for one more question, then we'll have some more time at the end.
I feel similarly regarding the Indiana University of Bloomington. I know Dr. Kuskowski has a similar background to mine. I did my master's in public health under Dr. Reese and Debbie Rubenick and people at the Center for Sexual Health Promotion. So I feel like creating something like that here would be a really powerful tool to bring Northeast schools together under a banner. Mm-hmm.
Great, that's an excellent idea for moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you.